Hey, Greg, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
How was your trip down south?
It was tremendous.
You're refreshed. You're revitalized. You're invigorated.
No, because when you get back from vacation, you might think that you are, but it's like an, like I said on the blog, it's like being offline for a week is like, you feel like an astronaut that plummeted back to Earth after 4 years. You feel like there's a thousand things you've missed. I spent the entire train ride back from New York going back for the last week and a half figuring out what we missed. Which, I, by the way, is the question of the day here on the Merrick versus Wyszynski podcast. Tell us what we missed. Merrick and I took a week off last week. We really
Hang on. I was still working. I was still doing Hockey Central every night.
But you weren't on the podcast mindset.
No, your
Hockey Central bullshit is a different animal than what we usually talk about on the podcast. It's a different animal.
That is true.
So we want to know
different beast,
but what we missed. What did we miss? So puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, at Wyszynski, at Jeff Merrick on the Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. What did we miss? So to answer your question, I guess I do have some clarity of mind. I am somewhat rested. It was a delightful time. Me and my lady went to St. Lucia. I have a tan, which is big news for a blogger.
What?
I know, right? I know. That beautiful moment when you walk out on the sun-drenched balcony of your villa and the sun hits your face as a blogger and you go just hiss at it.
I always thought that you were a guy that sizzled that didn't tan, though. Isn't that you?
I am. But usually what happens is I sizzle and then I tan, right? Ah. Is how it works. But I did pretty well. We lathered ourselves in protective sunblocking stuff. Vacation in a nutshell: we went sailing and crashed a boat. We went into hot spring. I can't go into it. Hot springs
crashed
that were about 190 degrees. Skin was burning and boiling, and then we took a mud bath.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, so that was a good time. I feel somewhat revitalized. But at the same time, I also feel like it warms our hearts, but also makes us sad when things happen in hockey and we aren't around to comment on it on a daily basis.
It was very nice
to get all your messages during the week we were off. Yet at the same time, it was very frustrating to not be here to delight in the firing of Scott Housen. Now, when I say delight in it, I don't mean delight in the fact that a man lost his job. We never want to see people lose their jobs, not in this economy after all. But I do take some delight in the idea that a decision Scott Housen made led to his demise. Is that decision trading Rick Nash? No, it's not. It's suggesting to ownership that when John Davidson became available, they should go out and hire John Davidson. John Davidson was, in a roundabout way, Scott Housen's decision. And then John Davidson comes in, probably looks over the books and sees some of the decisions that have been made in the last several years with Scott Housen at the helm, and decides to kick him to the curb during the season. So a decision Scott Housen made led to his demise.
I think that was part of it. I think a lot of it, too. I think John Davidson looked at what the Columbus Blue Jackets have on the horizon, namely three first-round picks this year in the draft, and said to himself, self, what is Scott Housen's draft record versus this Finnish gentleman who worked with me in St. Louis, Kekäläinen, I believe is his name. What's his draft record like? Honestly, I think more than anything else, they're resetting the Columbus Blue Jackets' wish, and they said, this is the chance we can do it in one fell, do a large chunk of it in one fell swoop. We better not mess this up. And it's not exactly a coincidence that a week after Ryan Johansson, who was one of Scott Housen's top picks as general manager, was a fourth overall, the minute he gets sent down to the American Hockey League, there's no room at the inn here for you. A week later, Scott Housen is gone. I don't think it's a it's a mystery why those two and two is equal four. That was, I think this is John Davidson saying, we're going to reset ourselves. We're going to be bad. We understand that. Remember we had JD on? I mean, didn't he kind of, when the timber of the conversation, when it turned to the general manager, he kind of got the assumption that he's not giving him the double thumbs up seal of approval. So that generally means this guy is on his way out. I think the decision was made the minute John Davidson took the job that was it for Scott Housen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. And it was just a matter of timing. you've brought up the points. Let's do it real quick as we write the obit for Scott Housen, who, by the way, listen, as inept as he was as a general manager, and I was not a fan of most of the moves. I actually was a fan of the Jeff Carter trade because I thought that was a nice aggressive move to get something that the franchise needed, even if Carter may not have been the right guy. I didn't mind that. And I didn't mind the Wisniewski signing either. It wasn't as if everything he did I was critical of. It's
a lot of money. But you got to overpay. But when you're Columbus, that's the thing. Like you can blast the Blue Jackets all you want. But when you're a team like Columbus, you have to overpay for your free agents.
Right,
more
exactly.
More so than any other market has to.
It's funny you should bring that up because I was on with Brady and Lang this morning. We talked about the Winnipeg Jets and the idea that, will that market be enough to attract free agents? Probably not. Will the money be enough to attract free agents? And that's the real question for me. You bring up the Blue Jackets, and if you took the totality of this league and you looked at it critically, there are probably more teams in the they have to overpay to get free agents spot than the free agents are throwing themselves at these franchises to go play their spots, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
totally. And the one big one has always been for me Montreal. It's funny, Ellen Etchingham was over last night. Her and her husband Julian and Tyler Deller,
husband,
your buddy.
Owen.
Yes,
husband, okay.
Julian, good right. dude. And Tyler Deller and his wife Amanda came over last night too. So we started talking about the Montreal Canadiens. And my point has always been this: if there's any team that deserves special dispensation in order to go above the salary cap, it's the Montreal Canadiens because of how high the provincial tax is in Quebec. Like,
right.
I'm much warmer to the idea that, you do the salary cap after taxes. Like, you calculate what the player earns after taxes. That, if you really want to level the playing field, that's the way you do it. Because there's a huge difference between playing in Tampa Bay and playing in Quebec. Like, remember last year we talked to Brian Lawton on the program.
Uh-huh.
We I don't know if we did this on the air or off the air, but I've talked to Brian Lawton before about what the deal was for Vincent LeCavalier. And Habs fans hate hearing this, but this was a deal that Bob Gainey signed off on. It was Vincent LeCavalier in exchange for Carey Price, PK Subban, either a first-round pick or Max Pacioretty. I think Tampa was going to take the pick as opposed to Pacioretty. Would have decimated the Montreal Canadiens. The reason the trade didn't get done is LeCavalier wouldn't waive his no trade. Why wouldn't he waive his no trade? No slight against Montreal. But the minute he waives his no-trade clause and goes to Quebec, all of a sudden he takes about $15 million off of his contract. But it's like handing a check over to the provincial government. Here, I don't want this because I want to play for the Montreal Canadiens. It would cost him money in order to play there. And there are plenty of teams, whether it's taxes, whether it's geography, whether it's culture, and I think that's a big one with the Blue Jackets. That is a team desperately in need of a culture change. And I think that's what's going to start happening now. I'm not sure where you're on this. I fully expect bodies to be flying out the door come trade deadline time with Columbus.
Well, it's funny you say culture, because the first thought that I had as far as culture was the community. And not to bridge gall off Winnipeg here, but Winnipeg, Edmonton, there are some places that are always going to have the rap that they're not going to be as, let's shall we say, inviting as a place like Tampa Bay, for example. By the
Cold.
Way, so look if Montreal should be allowed to go above the cap, does that mean that we should raise the floor on Dallas because there's no taxes in Texas?
Or the Panthers or the Tampa Bay Lightning? Oh, yeah. I never thought of it that way. That's a good point. Oh, no. Your floor, Mr. Gilardi, is a little bit higher than everybody else's. Absolutely. That's a good point.
Yes, and that's how you get Jaromír Jagr in Texas. Scott Housen drafted Jakub Voracek number 7 overall, round 1.
Yep.
Remember that Stefan Lee, what's his name? Legion?
Stefan Legion. Stefan Legion. Yeah. Good junior player. Fell in with the wrong bunch of buddies.
You think?
And ended up taking a year off hockey. Yeah, it was a bad scene.
Yep.
And he was part of that Oakville Mafia with like John Tavares and Sam Gagne and Steve Mason. And Legion was like, it was a great player for Team Canada, the juniors, but just kind of fell out of love with hockey and in love with his quote unquote new buddies that he found.
We've 2008. Before. Number 6 overall, Nikita Filatov. Who will go down as one of the biggest busts in NHL history, unless
he
comes back.
Yeah,
one
new age Zverev.
Matt Calvert was a good pick.
Yeah,
127 overall. Cam Atkinson, a good pick, 157 overall.
Like Cam Atkinson,
and also Sean Collins in that draft. John Moore, who's a good little player, right?
Jury's still out. Should be a better player.
Number 21 overall.
David Savard should be a better player.
Number 21 overall. He was in a Jakob Josefsson Jordan Schrader sandwich and taken ahead of players like Tim Erickson, Marcus Johansson, and Kyle Palmieri, by the way.
Who was this man?
That was John Moore that year.
Oh, that was John Moore. Yeah.
Yeah. So not a terrible pick yet, but kind of a shitty pick. No. Ryan Johansson, as Merrick mentioned, a Scott Housen special, sent down once again. This is going to be one of those drafts where everybody's going to look bad because the guy at number 7 could, and the guy at number 12 could come out of this draft being better
Jeff
than
Skinner?
Anybody from 3 down. Yeah,
Skinner was 7
and
who was 12?
Fowler.
Yeah. Oh, and Jack Campbell really fell far in that draft too, didn't he?
He did. He fell to 11. So it went Johansson, Niederreiter, Connolly, and then Skinner. But no one knew Skinner was going to be Skinner. Did they?
Listen, if anyone bothered to pay attention to what I was writing at cbcsports.ca that year, honestly, I'm not making this up, and I talked to Mike Sundheim about this, the PR director for the Carolina Hurricanes when they drafted Skinner. I was the guy saying he is right behind whoever you're taking, Tyler or Taylor. I had him as number 3 in the draft. That's just because I watch a ton of OHL games, so I have a sort of OHL bias, and I get that. But I was the guy banging the drum for – sorry to pat myself on the back here, but I was the guy saying Skinner's the third best in that draft.
And then the other notable drafts here, Boone Jenner, number 37 overall. They didn't have a first-round pick in 2011.
Good pick.
And then 2012, Ryan Murray, second overall. Obviously, we don't know anything yet. And then Oscar Dansk, I remember, was a pick that everybody kind of loved at 31 overall. So Housen, you know – had some spectacular whiffs in the draft, but the last two look maybe a little bit more promising, but that could just be because we don't know whether they were more whiffs. Bottom line for me on Scott Housen, glad to see him go. Franchise needed a new direction, needed a house cleaning. I will always respect him as being one of those guys from Team Ken Holland who think outside the box for ways to improve this game. The fact that we have we break ties with actual real hockey wins instead of shootout wins, that was a Scott Housen invention. And I wish that this guy could lend his out-of-the-box thinking and quirky genius to the direction of the league, not so much to building a championship team, because he can't.
Here's something to do. Have a look at general managers for expansion clubs. It's tough. Yeah, it really is challenging. And Doug McClain knows this better than anybody else, being the first in the history of the Blue Jackets. When you're a general manager, like either the first or second general manager of an expansion club, generally you don't work again in that same capacity. It is almost career suicide. Hey, where is Doug Risebrough these days? You know what I'm talking about? Like when you take one of these jobs, it is almost as if you're signing your last contract and you're signing your ticket. That's it. I know when I check out from here or when someone checks me out, I'm probably done as a general manager. It is so – hi, Don Waddell. It is so hard to get from underneath, you know, the pile that is being general manager of an expansion team. You know, Doug McClain, and we had a couple of sniffs in the KHL and one in Europe last year, but no one's banging down the door for Doug. And listen, you just signed a new contract with Sportsnet. I wonder if the same fate falls on the shoulders of Scott Housen. I suspect yes. It's tough, man. It's tough with expansion teams.
If you're going to start an expansion team tomorrow, who would you hire as your GM? Would you go experience? Go down the Neil Smith avenue?
No, I would. It would be a young guy.
I got a guy.
Currently available?
Currently an assistant general manager in this very league that we cover.
Jason Botterill?
Yep.
Really,
nailed it.
Pittsburgh
Jason
Penguins.
Jason Botterill,
really?
Assistant general manager for the Pittsburgh Penguins, learning under the wing of the great Ray Shiro. I would hire Jason Botterill in a second.
Doesn't it sort of, but don't you need to judge it based on the marketplace? Like, what is Jason Botterill learning about, say, for example, running an expansion franchise? What does Jason Botterill know about running a franchise in a small market? Like, if you're a small market team, wouldn't you want someone like Paul Fenton, who's also an AGM under David Poile? Like, wouldn't you want someone like that?
Well,
as opposed to, you know, running a team with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Marc-Andre Fleury, and Chris Letang.
Oh, so you're saying that he's just had it all handed to him then?
No, I'm just saying it's you're learning in a different environment. Don't you want to sort of suit your needs based on your market?
I want a young, I think Jason Botterill will make an excellent general manager. Smart hockey guy in there, and I think that Botterill's that guy.
Yeah, there's a few. Julian Brisebois in Tampa is another one you throw into that mix.
Sure,
there's a number of
absolutely, there's
a number of guys. When you look at the wave now as the sort of old boys, you know, the old boys network of, you know, this, the recycling of coaches and recycling of general managers, as that sort of, we're at a time in history now where that's getting phased out. I mean, right now you see coaches wish generally in their 40s and general managers in their early 50s. That seems to be the vibe, as opposed to coaches in their 50s and general managers in their 60s. I mean, Brian Murray is the freak. You know, Brian Murray's 70 years old. Like, think about that. Think about what Brian Murray has gone through in hockey. Dude is 70, still as sharp as a whip. Don't know how long he's going to be in Ottawa. Speculation is he wants to leave it for his son, Tim. Who knows if he ends up getting that gig. But nowadays it seems as if, yeah, we're hiring 50-year-olds to run our teams and bench bosses are somewhere in their 40s.
Well, it's a young man's game, Merrick, which should make you nervous.
I know. Just don't start hiring younger announcers. And I'll be fine.
Yep. They get younger and younger.
Welcome back.
More and more of them, it seems like.
Yeah, thanks, pal. Yeah, I appreciate that.
That's right. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, we are back. Thanks for hanging in there during our little vacation. As you could tell, Merrick, our break came at the right time because my boy lost his voice.
It's crazy. Last week, out of nowhere, Monday night doing Hockey Central. After the first block, my voice just vanished. I tried to gut it out on Tuesday, and the show sounded like this. I couldn't do the tease, because essentially the tease is just yelling and screaming in a booth to open up the show. Couldn't do that. So I had to take Wednesday off, had absolutely no voice wish.
Wow,
and
crazy.
It's just started to come back now. I'm sure you can feel this little, like an octave lower, but it's just starting to come back. So actually, it was perfect. It was a perfect time to take a break.
Come up with the show today from the Minnesota Wild, rookie goaltender Darcy Kemper.
Yeah,
man. Won his first NHL game just, I believe, it was yesterday. And that's exciting. So we're going to have Darcy on. And we wanted a goalie because goalies are nuts. We figure he's going to be nuts. So I think that's a good thing. Again, question
he's
of the day.
You know what?
Yeah.
You know why he's not nuts?
What?
Because he's from Saskatchewan. And no one from Saskatchewan is nuts.
Gotcha.
Did I tell you what my agent friend said to me once? I said,
what's that?
All of your clients are like, you never have a problem with any of your clients. And he said, it's pretty simple because I recruit from two places, Sweden and Saskatchewan. No work at all. Low maintenance people. And dudes from Saskatoon. So
there you go. All right. So we got him coming up. Question of the day. What did we miss while we were on vacation? Also, I got some problems with the Jeremy Roenick book. I read the Jeremy Roenick book on vacation and I got some problems with it. So.
All right.
We will discuss that later on, but now let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with a game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living.
If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you're going to feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay?
I'm a kindly old wizard.
Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift Current Broncos. Lethbridge Hurricanes. The Vancouver Giants.
God. Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show, so we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
Some may have the ho-ho. Good news,
might have the ding-dong.
And more hockey.
Jeff Merrick on the puck.
Yes.
Knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Hey, which company harshed that music for their ad?
Oh, I don't know. People keep on telling us that there are companies that are using our music on their ads.
I heard it last week.
It's H&R Block.
It's H&R
Block. There it is. Yeah. I heard it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I thought we were the only ones on the Alan Hawkshaw tip. Guess not.
Well, here's the beautiful part,
that's just
right?
Coincidence.
Since we don't have anybody sponsoring the show, I'll just say it. What a bunch of assholes. They clearly were inspired by our show. We've been using that music for how long? And all of a sudden it's back in the mainstream?
I made the intro first.
Yeah,
just
there
saying.
You go.
Yeah.
Josh,
I agree.
Man. I'd lawyer up if I were you, Josh. I'd lawyer up, bud.
A couple things. First off, your three-time Stanley Cup champion New Jersey Devils are in action as we speak against the Ottawa Senators. They currently have a 1-0 lead on a Steven Gionta goal.
Hard for Ottawa to score goals these days, bro.
I bring this up, sir, to talk about Ottawa. Sweet, sweet Ottawa. When we were out, Erik Karlsson went out. What did you? I'm glad I wasn't here for that, to be honest with you, because the idea that anybody, be it Eugene Melnick, be it whomever, would think that there should have been some sort of repercussion for Matt Cook on what was an accidental play is asinine. Asinine.
I understand, you know, I understand the frustration of the Ottawa Senators organization and their fans, and I get that you always, you know, something bad happened to this team. We have to blame someone. We want to blame someone for an accident. It's convenient that it's number 24 on the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, it's pretty, and it's easy to look at Matt Cook and see the nameplate and say, oh, of course it's got to be deliberate. Look, man, if Matt Cook wanted to hurt Erik Karlsson, he would have ran him into the boards. He hugged him and pinned him.
Also, has everyone forgotten that Matt Cook is a changed man? He's a changed man. The supplemental discipline process worked. Changed man. Won't hurt anybody anymore.
What did you...
Remember he was a Lady Bing candidate last year until he went crazy at the end of the year?
I know. He's the new Stan Mikita. I know. He's the new Stan Mikita. We get
He's
that.
He's not hurting anyone.
Did you have a problem with what Eugene said about him? Do you have a problem with an owner beaking a player?
No,
because the unwritten rule in the NHL is this. If you're not going to get on the ice, then you're not, quote-unquote, allowed to chirp a player. Like, players go berserk when coaches beak at them on the ice, right? It's an unwritten rule that you don't do that. And it's really frowned upon. You really look down upon, you know, in a bad way when a coach who doesn't get on the ice chirps a player from the bench. It's to say nothing of an owner. Do you have a problem with what Eugene said?
No, because if I did, by that standard, then there shouldn't have been a single tweet from an NHL player during the lockout. About finances.
Bingo. Thank you. I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, it's a little tasteless. But at the same time, we heard player after player blasting Jeremy Jacobs and Craig Leopold and Ted Leonsis and Rob Murray Edwards right down the list about how they run hockey teams. But heaven forbid an owner would say something about a player that's detrimental.
All of
a sudden, you can't say that. You have no right. You've never played the game. Well, last time I checked, a lot of the guys in the Players Association don't have their business degrees, but they somehow became experts on labor negotiations.
Glad you brought it up, though. Glad you brought it up, because we got an email from William Daw, a listener who's very happy that we're back today, and wants to – and this is the email. I think there are a lot of similarities between Melnick's ramblings this past week and Mario Lemieux's open letter after the Islanders' brouhaha 2 seasons ago. Both were fairly whiny and hypocritical. Pens were complaining about goons while Cook was on the roster, and Ottawa has Neil. Neil and Cook have similar reputations as far as I can tell. People can call themselves goons, but they are anything but yada, yada, yada. Similarities between the two.
Let's pick up on that conversation in a couple of seconds because, Wish, we'll let you do the big intro. Our guest is standing by.
Well, this is very exciting. He's a rookie goaltender for the Minnesota Wild, who also obviously spent time in lovely Houston with the Arrows. He is Darcy Kuemper, and he joins us here on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hello, Darcy. Congratulations on your first National Hockey League victory.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Hey, here's the obvious question. Who gets the puck?
I think they gave Jason Zucker the puck that he scored right after, and then they brought a new one. So I got the one that we finished the game with.
So are you keeping it, or does that go to like, you know, family member, or does that go up on your mantle at home?
Hey, sorry, I can hardly hear you right now.
Oh, sorry. Do you keep the puck, or do you give that to someone in your family?
Oh, yeah. I'll keep it till I go home, and then I'll probably give it to my parents so they can keep it in the house.
Sweet. What do the veterans do when a rookie goalie wins his first game? Like, what's the coolest thing that happened to you from your teammates?
It was just a lot of congratulations, and, you could tell that everyone was genuinely happy for me because, they've all had firsts in their career, too, and I'm sure they know the feeling and how exciting it is, so... a lot of congratulations, a lot of high fives, things like that.
What's that feeling like your first game in the NHL as a netminder? Some of y'all, of course, y'all dream about growing up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. You always dream about it. What's it like, actually, though, when you first, all right, I'm putting on the oven mitts, I'm putting on the mask, and I'm going into this game? What's that feeling like?
It's a combination of nervousness and excitement. The day leading up to it, it goes so fast, but at the same time, it couldn't go any quicker. You know, you just want to get out there, and it really is a dream come true. And it's hard to describe the feeling because it's just a bundle of emotions running through you all at once. And it's great once the game starts because you can kind of calm your nerves and just start playing hockey.
Darcy, you defeated the Detroit Red Wings in this game. Pavel Datsyuk, 3 shots. Henrik Zetterberg, 6 shots. Did you come close to shitting your pants at any point during the game when you have those two guys coming down on you? Or were you cool as a cucumber?
I try not to pay attention to who was shooting. Just try to play each shot as if it was just another guy shooting. But, those two guys, they're crazy good. And obviously some of the best players I've ever played against. Played against the Sedins in my first game in Vancouver, so some pretty good players already I've got the chance to play against, and they really keep you alert, and if you're not alert, they'll make you pay for it. So I just try to stay focused whenever they have the puck anywhere near the zone, because I just try to be ready for anything.
How do you play, or do you play differently when you play in the NHL versus playing in, like, well, as Greg mentioned, playing with the Houston Aeros of the American Hockey League? Is there a different way to play in the NHL as a netminder than in the American League?
You know what? I think that you got to try to play the same way. You got to stick to the base of your game, and you don't want to change the way you play, because if you do that, you know, you kind of go into uncomfortable territory. Things that you would change is just like, obviously the little passing plays and the shots, everything's a lot more accurate and a lot more creative. So you change in the sense of you want to be alert and ready for anything, but you want to react to it as if, you know, you would at any level. You never want to change your game.
I know with line mates, you kind of get a sense of chemistry pretty quick, whether or not you click with a guy. Is it the same thing with a goalie and a certain defenseman? Like, are there certain guys in the blue line that you just seem to have a immediate chemistry with versus other guys? Does it work the same way?
Yeah, you know, defensemen, a lot of them play different ways. You know, there's guys that will tie up a stick in front. There's guys that will try to block the shot, you know, different ways that they support when you have the puck, playing the puck. And, you know, it takes a while, but you kind of feel everyone out. And then, when they're on the ice, you know what to expect from them. And, I'm very lucky that we play the exact same system in Houston as we do here. So, you know, it wasn't unfamiliar territory coming up, and all of a sudden the team in front of me was playing a completely different game. And, just, you know, kind of knowing where everyone was going to be in the system and what their jobs were defensively really helped that transition a lot.
Hey, Darcy, where are you at on shot blocking by defensemen, or forwards for that matter? Some goaltenders love it. Hey, man, block as many shots as you can. It makes my night easier. Other goaltenders are, you know what, get out of the way. Let me see the shot. Darcy, where are you at on shot blocking?
You know, I love when the forwards get up to the point and block the shot way up there.
Yeah.
A lot of times when a D-man's in front trying to block, like 2-3 feet in front of me trying to block it, I'm not a big fan of that. I'm more of a fan of, you know, find their guy and make sure he doesn't tip it, kind of move him out of the way and let me see it. But mm-hmm. I understand that there are times when defensemen feel like they have to block a shot, but preferably I'd prefer if they just tie someone up and box them out and let me see the shot.
Let you do your thing. Not monkey around with your process. That's exactly right. I've spoken like a goaltender, man. Sick and tired of this shot blocking. You're a goalie. Now, we had a discussion before you came on, Darcy. I think as a goaltender, you probably have a series of quirky superstitions and personality traits. But Merrick thinks that since you're from Saskatoon, you're a normal person rather
completely
than being
sane.
A goaltender.
Completely
are you,
sane, yes.
Are you more insane goalie or sane goalie because you're from Saskatoon?
You know what? I'd have to go with the sane category here.
See?
You know, I've played, yeah, sane. I've played with a lot of goalies that, you know, you can't talk to them. They're doing this and that, and they have to tape their stick a certain way. And I mean, to that sense, you know, I have a routine where with stretching and taping my stick and everything before the game, but I wouldn't call it superstition. You know, I can talk to guys, I can stay a little bit looser, and you know, I find that I can turn my focus on pretty quick, so that I don't really need to, you know, all of a sudden get to the rink 2 hours before the game and not talk to anyone. I can, you know, right before warm-ups when I'm getting dressed, you know, start focusing then. But yeah, no crazy superstitions or anything like that for me.
You know, and the conversation started, and maybe you know the agent that I'm talking about, because he's based in the West, but one agent friend of mine, pretty high-profile guy, said to me, I mainly recruit from two places because I like sane athletes and I don't like 4 o'clock in the morning phone calls. I recruit from two places, Sweden and Saskatchewan, because those two places are where you get the most normal athlete in the world. Who are some of your heroes growing? Who are some of your guys growing up, Darcy? Who are the guys that you admired?
Patrick Waugh obviously was a big fan for any goalie in my era growing up. Then also, Mike Richter with the Rangers. I had a big fancy hockey card of his and, a big fan of his ever since, he had that one world championships where he was just unbelievable. I still remember that save where he kind of dove back and gloved it was going in. Those two guys are probably the biggest ones. Mike Vernon with the Flames. Then also forwards, obviously, Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg, Steve Yzerman, you know, those guys were unreal, and I really idolized all those players and just tried to emulate their work ethics and all that stuff.
So you're listed at 6'5", is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate.
All right, so
maybe
we got
6'4 and three quarters.
All right, so we got you at 6'4 and three quarters. We got Lynn back down in Tampa at 6'6". We obviously have Ben Bishop. Who do you think could dunk? Who do you think's the best dunker of that trio? if we've all put you out on the baseline and said, show us some magic, who do you think's got
the
best
game? Never seen those guys off ice, so I don't know what kind of athletic ability they bring to the basketball court. But I actually played some basketball in high school, so I would consider myself an early favorite, but then again, I haven't seen them play, so I don't know.
So you're saying that they found a high school in Saskatoon, they found a place for a 6'5 kid to on the basketball team. I'm stunned by this.
Yeah, I wasn't that tall back then. I was still growing, but I played in grade 9 in high school on the freshman team, and I was about 6'2" back then.
You know, it is an interesting question, you know, and Greg rattles off some of the world's tallest freestanding goaltenders in the NHL right now. Do you think the era of the small goaltender is done? Like, do you think we'll ever see a small goalie again?
You know what? I think there will be. There's going to be people that aren't limited by their size that are so quick and so agile and have such great reaction speed that I don't think that, you know, they're going to be shunned just because they're small. But I think you are going to see more of a shift of more and more big goalies coming in because, if you can be big and athletic, you know, you can't really go wrong with that. You know, you take up a lot of the net and you can still move. And, I mean, with today's training and athletics, you're going to see more and more of that.
Last one for me. What do you do on the road? Like, you're 22, right? So I talked to Nick Spaulding from the Predators the other day, and we're talking about how, like, nobody plays cards anymore. And now it's just kind of like you sit there and you're watching, you know, something on your iPad or maybe playing a video game. Like, what do you do on the road? What's your process? What do you do to relax?
I haven't really had, I think you're talking about, like, bus trips and flights. I've only had one of those with the Wild so far, but down in Houston, We had some old school players. We'd get together, play some cards, play for a little bit of money. Nothing too crazy, but I still like that old the old getting together, playing cards rather than everyone on their iPads, just because it's good team bonding, you know, and it really passes the time quick, brings everyone together. And I grew up playing cards with my grandparents and friends and stuff like that. So I'm always a card player. So I enjoy doing that.
What's your game? Are you a poker guy or?
I'm guessing.
It's hard to play euchre. Poker on the bus. We usually play Schnarps. I don't know if you know what that is, but
yeah.
It's just an easy game for money, basically.
Not euchre. I thought euchre ruled in the West.
No, we play Kaiser, which in Saskatchewan, which is similar to euchre. I've heard.
It's the German version.
I gotta get hip to this. Hey, last one.
Hey, are you a German Canadian, by the way, Darcy?
My great grandparents migrated from Germany.
Wow.
And they settled in Saskatoon?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Hey man, listen, as you well know, Saskatchewan's the fastest growing province in Canada. That province is, it's like the new BC. It's completely popped right now with, people
going
from,
different
provinces.
Now.
Hey, really quick before we let you go, Darcy, do you find that head coaches, and I guess Mike Yeo is the obvious one now for you in Minnesota, that head coaches have a hard time talking to netminders? That it's like, okay, because generally you don't see goaltenders become head coaches in the NHL. Like the list you can count on your one hand, you know, the amount of head coaches that have been goaltenders. You think of Emil Francis and Glenn Hanlon.
I think that has a lot to do with, you know, being a head coach would be so stressful, you know, tons of pressure, and, you know, you have to have your team do well. And I think as goalies, we've had enough of that pressure during our careers that, you know, once we're done with it, we're pretty happy to be to move on from that. And I think a lot of that is just that you don't want to put yourself back in that situation again. But, you know, I think goalies could be good coaches. I mean, obviously, you see the entire game, and I think a goalie coach would know how to win. Wouldn't necessarily be the highest scoring team, but they would know how a team needs to play to win. But yeah, I'm not sure why there aren't many out there.
Also, because Tuukka Rask would throw the bench. He would throw the bench were he a coach, and that's a beautiful thing. Darcy yeah. Kuemper, thank you so much for joining us on the American Wrestling Podcast. You did very well, sir, and we wish you continued luck with the Minnesota Wild.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, no Darcy. See,
I'm gonna instill a new policy on this show, right now. Only rookies. Only rookies. Send us your rookies, NHL teams. We will have good interviews with them. Oh, you know, older players, it gives a shit what they, you know.
Okay,
rookies.
So, I just got a note here. Anaheim says we're gonna have Teemu Selanne tomorrow, so I guess we should say no.
Oh, I mean, rookies are really, really old players.
Oh.
Really, okay. Really old players.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. That rule changed fast.
So listen, we talked about playing cards, and that reminds me of the Roenick book. And so here's the thing about the Roenick book, because I wanted to talk about that on the show today. Right. I read it on vacation. It's Jeremy Roenick with Kevin Allen. It's called JR, My Life as the Most Outspoken, Fearless, and Hard-Hitting Man in Hockey. Now, all you need to know about this book, folks, is on the back of the jacket. You need to announce to the world that you intend to do whatever it takes to win. You need to show some balls and some big red letters so you know he means it. Mm. That's the way I played, and that's the way I think. When you read this book, I hope it makes you angry in italics. I hope it makes you curious in italics. I hope it makes you laugh in italics. I hope it makes you think in italics. Mostly, I hope it makes you wonder, what the F was Roenick thinking? Now, this is where I have to admit, there's truth in advertising. I'm still wondering what the F Roenick was thinking. And I am very curious about this book, because at the end of the day, despite it being very entertaining, good stories in there, despite it giving you some insight into his process, despite it being very well written by our good friend Kevin Allen, I still don't know what he's thinking. Because here's the most annoying thing about this Roenick book. You go into it with the promise of somebody who is so outspoken that there's going to be no filter, no holds barred. It's going to be everything. It's going to be him opening up his chest and guts spilling out into the book. And it is so not that. Examples. At one point when he was with the Phoenix Coyotes, his wife was so pissed off about him and what he was doing, the life he was leading, the person that he was, that she came down to the dressing room between periods and called him out and talked shit on him in front of his boys. This is an amazing story. I'm sure it probably happens more often than we think, but it's an amazing story. Now, you read that story and you say to yourself, what could Jeremy Roenick have done to piss off the love of his life? To the point where she would call him out during a game. And we never find out.
Oh,
we never find out.
Really?
Not a word.
See, I haven't.
Nope.
Mea culpa. It's been sitting on my shelf since before Christmas, and I haven't got around to reading it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get to it eventually. I've just got so many books in between that I have to get to that I'm more interested in. I don't know that I'd be that honestly, I don't know that I'd be that interested in Jeremy Roenick's book.
In the moments, although, where you're like,
Although I would be curious, and let me know if he did anything. Did he talk about his role in the Players Association during the 04-05 lockout?
Yeah. Well, he talked about where his head was and how he was outspoken and that kind of thing, and his relationship with like-minded players. That's actually a good chunk of one of the chapters is the lockout. So you might want to read that part. It only goes so deep. You hear about, you know, problems with coaches. You hear about some problems with teammates, but you never get any specifics. You hear vague references to his gambling problems, but you don't know if that's what set off his wife. There's actually a moment in the book where he talks about a teammate of his with a gigantic penis. A gigantic penis. And a thing where they had him take out this Louisville slugger between his legs in front of Roenick's wife as a goof. And we never learn the name of the player. This book is so worried about revelations, it doesn't flatter the guy with the gigantic schwanz. If Roenick goes to this guy and he's like, hey man, I was going to talk about the giant Louisville slugger between your legs in this book. And that guy's like, oh, please don't do that. Please don't reveal to the hockey world that I've a gigantic penis.
Don't let everyone know why my nickname is Driftwood. Oh, please. Yeah. Oh, please don't do that.
Please, Jeremy, don't let everyone know that when I walk down the street, sparks come off.
Yeah, please, Jeremy, don't let anyone know that if I played in the major league in MLB, I could swing at the same pitch twice.
But it's that's very good. But again, that's the thing that pisses you off, is that you go into this book knowing it's Roenick, knowing he's got some tails, looking for the crazy stuff. And frankly, I've heard better stories about Roenick than Roenick tells about himself. And the other thing that pisses me off is that you can, for whatever reason, dude, you can count on one hand the number of guys he calls out. And it's the same problem he has on TV. The greatest moment for Jeremy Roenick on NBC was what?
Patrick Marleau.
Calling out Patrick Marleau. Calling him gutless. And then backtracking. And those are the two things that pissed me off about this book more than anything else. It was that he didn't call out more people, because you know he's got opinions, but he's going to keep them to himself because he's still in the boys' club. He's still in a constant state of audition for gigs. He calls out Marleau. He calls out Oleg Tverdovsky. He maybe calls out another guy. You can count on one hand the number of people that really get it.
What do you call
for being a guy who wasted talent. Which again is sort of the same thing with the Marleau stuff, is that you don't have the mental wherewithal. And this is, again, not to take anything away from Roenick as a player, because he put himself out there as a player like no one else. I mean, this guy took punishment. This guy's face exploded twice as a player. He's a hell of a player. And I also think that in comparison to most commentators, he's a hell of a commentator. But he only will bring it to a certain point because he's still a player. He still has the player mindset. You don't talk shit on your boys. And it's a problem in the book. It's a problem as a commentator, is that he simply won't go that extra bit to slam somebody, even though he feels that way. And he gets compared to Charles Barkley. Barkley goes that extra mile. Barkley will call out anybody. And Roenick won't call out anybody. Roenick will never call out his boys. He will never do it.
That's 100% true. Although but so few guys ever do. Like, when you look at the history of books written by players, it's a lot of this. He was a good guy. This guy was a good guy. Oh, I liked him. He's a good guy, good teammate. There's a lot of the good guy syndrome. You know who didn't do that in his book? You know who went completely the opposite direction, and it alienated him from a lot of his
teammates.
His teammates, specifically from the Boston Bruins, who like told the stories and then named the names that were involved in the stories. That's Phil Esposito. If you go and read Thunder and Lightning, go read. If you want to have the kind of book that Wish is talking about here, the kind of book that you want, where it's these are the stories and here are the people involved and here's what everybody did, including myself. And Phil throws himself under the bus too. Check out Thunder and Lightning. It is shocking how behind the scenes Phil gets with things that happened off the road and who was involved with them, specifically teammates, specifically married teammates. It was a book that really challenged a lot of marriages, let's just say.
And
that's because in 1970, I was inside of a brothel with Ken Hodge. And Ken Hodge had a horse cock. He had a giant schwanz on him, and it was really good, but...
You laugh, but it's like that. I'm serious. Have you read that book?
I've never read it. I want to read it now.
You should
read
it.
In fact, what I might do is maybe I'll do this for charity. Do you think I could do an audio version of that book as Phil Esposito for charity? You think people would buy that if I read that book as an audio book?
Sure, man. Oh, are you kidding? You doing Phil Esposito reading Thunder and Lightning?
Maybe
that's awesome.
That
can we just have a Thunder and Lightning corner here on the podcast maybe once a week?
That's not a bad idea either. Do you own that book?
Yes, I do.
So oh, shit, man. This might be a new department.
There's two. Hang on. Let me go grab it. Hang on. I'm in my office right now. Give me 2 seconds. Let me go grab it. Hang on. I'm going to give you a paragraph to read. Stand by. Sure. Kill time. I'm going to get it.
Oh, that's not really killing time. The two things about the Roenick book that pissed me off, like I said, doesn't call out enough people, and... much like he did in the Marlowe situation, although not to this extent, he kind of backed off the Marlowe stuff, never really came out and apologized to the guy, just kind of backed off a little bit. This book, though, is mea culpa after mea culpa, after apology, after contrition.
Got it.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting to read a guy who wants to be Mr. Outspoken, Mr. No Holds Barred, and then read constant... you know, I did this back then, and you're like, this is a great story. And then dial it back and be like, but I was a real dick, and I'm sorry for doing that. Just like, just own it, man. And the other thing, okay, the one last thing, two last things that piss me off about this book. Don't build up a story that doesn't have a satisfactory finale, i.e. an amazing tale about a high-stakes poker game on the team plane between Jeremy Roenick and Keith Tkachuk. Really great story. You're in it. This is amazing. I cannot wait to see who wins this pot. And they both pussy out and split the pot.
Oh.
Why put the story in the book if that's the story? And the other thing that pisses me off, and this is not the fault of Roenick, and I'm pretty sure it's not the fault of Kevin Allen. I'm sure this is an editor's problem. You don't need to have sentences like the Imperial Stormtroopers from the Star Wars movies. You don't have to have things like comedic actor Dan Aykroyd. If you don't know what an Imperial Stormtrooper is, if you don't know who Dan Aykroyd is, chances are you're not hip enough to be reading a Jeremy Roenick book. Don't spell it out like that. We're not idiots.
I got the book, by the way. And you know what? Okay. It's called Thunder and Lightning by Phil Esposito and Peter Golenbach. Do you know who Peter Golenbach is? I don't know that guy.
Peter Golenbach? No, I don't.
And it is subtitled A No BS Hockey Memoir. And it is. Like, I just opened it up because I'm going to try to get you to read something here. To page 155.
But that's the thing. Inside of it, there's plenty of BS. There's plenty of brewing stuff.
He's talking about a drunk Howard Cosell coming on to his wife. Like, honestly, the stuff in here is gold. Howard Cosell had a few drinks too many, and once again, he started putting his hands all over Donna. Again, I told him, I want you to keep your hands to yourself. There's a whole, like, little couple of paragraphs here on
that
drunk Howard Cosell trying to feel up his
wife.
That is
quite a moneymaker you've got there. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and he was there with Howard's wife, Emmy, too. Oh, man, that's hilarious.
Down with that book.
I forgot about
all
that
right, story. Here's what we'll do. I'll either pick up the book or you send me the book, and then we'll do. Was it called Thunder and Lightning?
Thunder and Lightning.
Lightning and Thunder? Thunder and Lightning?
Thunder and Lightning. It's actually the same title as the John Ferguson Sr. book, Thunder and Lightning, which was written in the early 70s. Same title. Thunder and Lightning. And, I mean, brilliant. Thunder and Lightning is an obvious one from one of the Tampa Bay Lightning, but that's what it's called, Thunder and Lightning.
Brilliant, brilliant.
I'll tell you, man, it's for the book that you wanted Jeremy Roenick to write, Wish, Phil Esposito has already written.
And listen, I cannot give a good review of the Roenick book because I enjoyed it. I got through it, but I was disappointed by it. I think that if you're a hockey fan, you should still read it because there's enough really interesting stuff, especially about some of the teams he was on. I mean, his stuff with Tkachuk is really interesting. His injury, if you're somebody who loves reading stories about injuries, this is a very good book for that as well. Like his jaw being shattered. The Darian Hatcher situation, that stuff's pretty good. And there is some stuff, like Merrick said, about the lockout and his role in it, which was interesting. And the brief moments in which you get him talking about how players aren't outspoken and too reserved, that kind of thing, is really interesting too.
Coming out of the last lockout, 04-05, he showed up at camp deliberately. I remember Roenick talked about this in the LA Times, deliberately 20 pounds out of shape as a protest because he's so angry at how ownership behaved during the lockout. Mm-hmm. He's like, screw them, I'm showing up out of shape at camp. Did he mention that in the book?
I don't know if he mentions it that way, but he definitely talks about how he would, like when he went to the LA Kings, he was woefully out of shape because that's the life he was living. Like, there is some personal insight insofar as his gambling, insofar as his drinking. That kind of stuff comes up, but you never really get clarity on it. It's never like XYZ happened, and you feel like the life this guy led, drinking, carousing, Like, you know, there is a, it's almost the vision I got reading this book was Jeremy Roenick, pushing himself against the closet door to keep from all of the skeletons pouring out over his body as he tries to write this book. and that's the sense you get is like, there's so much more there that's not in the book. And you're just like, where is it?
Maybe
what happened to it?
Maybe he'll be like Derek Sanderson and write 3 autobiographies.
Yeah.
Right, maybe. Like Crossing the Line was, I think the third one that he wrote. So maybe JR's got a couple more autobiographies in him still.
I hope so, because I think he's got a lot to offer, and this book really wasn't, it didn't go far enough for me. And I think that anybody who approaches this book based on like what the jacket promised is going to probably feel the same way, I think.
Hey, Jonathan Cable on Twitter, please, Thunder and Lightning Corner, hashtag Phil Esposito. I think we do this one. I think this one's a hit for you, Wish.
All right. All right.
Let me know if you want to buy it. You want me to say? Honestly, it's one that you should have on your bookshelf.
I should have it in my collection.
You really should. You should get this one. Yeah, it's
hockey books.
What
did we miss during the vacation? Was the question. Stephen O writes in. The Condor thing was pretty awesome. Remember the? Did you see the? Remember you saw the Condor?
Yeah, I saw that on Puck
right?
Daddy. I saw it on Puck Daddy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yep.
Jesus.
The Caps should sign it to a 2-year, $4.5 million deal to shut down Crosby. Better yet, Ovechkin could use it to distract, take out defenders, and get back to 65 goals. Where are you on the Caps right now, by the way?
I'm still not in love with them. They're playing better.
Volpe was great against the Rangers.
Yes, he was.
Great.
Yes, he was.
Oh God, brilliant.
I was in and out of that game. We had the aforementioned Theory of Ice and at MC79 Hockey over. So I was sort of in and out of that game. But all I could hear from the other room was, great save, Holtby. Great save, Holtby. It was burned into my brain yesterday as we're having dinner in the next room. So sounds like he had a great game.
Peter Plavritis writes in, last week while the show was off the air, I got a terrible stomach virus. Coincidence or withdrawal? I'll let you decide. Withdrawal, of course.
Ooh. I got laryngitis. Ooh,
that's nice. I got a tan
and drunk. What was your beer of choice, by the way?
There is one beer in St. Lucia. There's other beers there, but this is the beer everybody drinks. It's called Piton, named after the Piton Mountains. Yeah, the Piton, the big mountains. There's like two peaks, and they're called the Pitons, and this is the Piton beer. It tastes of Heineken, which is ironic because Heineken owns it, which is sort of weird. Hmm. There's also Heineken there. So I don't know what that's all about. It's like you have a local beer that tastes like Heineken, which Heineken owns, but Heineken also has Heineken there as well.
In North America, we sort of treat Heineken as if it's like a really high beer. But I've been told before it's kind of considered in Europe to be like Europe's Budweiser. Is that true? Mm. Does anybody know that?
This is shit.
We sort of put it on a pedestal here.
Dude, I forgot. I learned to not assume anything about beer the first time I went to Canada and saw Budweiser as an import, because that blew my mind, and it made me laugh. It made me feel bad.
I go to the U.S.
Guys.
I go to the U.S. and I see Labatt Blue as an import.
Yeah, exactly.
That be a different freezing Bud as an import?
Oh, how cute! Garbage.
I go to Sabres games and I'm like, hey, we got this imported beer. What do you got in the import beer section? Labatt Blue, huh? What?
Oh,
it's all blue
by the way,
listen, I think it's Sabres.
How do you lose that game for the Sabres yesterday?
I know. How do you lose that game? I don't know. Come all the way back in that game? Things are bad. Chips are falling. It's not going well.
We're going to see. I feel it. We're going to see a trade this week. I'm calling it. We're seeing a big trade this week from somebody. Somebody's going to hit the panic button this week.
It would make sense for Buffalo to be that team.
Yep.
To pull that, to pull the shoot.
Hey, speaking of trades, before we get back to the question of the day, if you were the this is a very interesting question for you.
Okay.
Okay. Pretend you're Glenn Sather. Grab your cigar, age yourself about 80 years.
F off with Shinsky. I don't talk to bloggers.
If you were, well, the Rangers certainly don't talk to this blogger.
challenging bunch, challenging bunch.
Challenging bunch. Tough when you wear your heart on your sleeve, sometimes. So, if you were the Rangers, would you give up Michael Delzato, Chris Kreider, and, or, I'm sorry, not and or, Chris Kreider or, JT Miller for, Ryan O'Reilly?
Yes. I feel
that. You'd make that trade.
I'd make that trade from the Rangers. I would do that.
You have enough, you're a Delzato guy.
On defense. I am a big Delzato guy.
But you're also an O'Reilly guy.
O'Reilly guy. Yeah. I think
that's
that
like,
he is.
That's
right,
like two
right
thirds of the package for Nash that would be going for O'Reilly.
Yep. I understand that. But you get one of the best two-way centers in the game. Someone you can pencil next to the Selke Trophy nomination every single year for 10 years. And I think he would fit so well in this John Tortorella system with the Rangers. I do that deal in a flash. And you're right, I am a Delzato guy. I like Michael Delzato a lot. But I'd still make that deal if I'm the Rangers, for sure.
Is there any way that Jonathan Toews loses to Selke this year, by the way?
Unless they penalize him for fighting Joe Thornton and taking a beating in the process.
It's not the lady
dumb. Right. So far, it's his to lose. It's his to lose. Although, I'm always putting Patrice Bergeron and David Backes in that conversation, too.
For sure. For sure. Paul Vogel writes in, things you guys missed. Grabowski biting Pacioretty in a fight.
The bites.
The Sharks.
Oh.
The Sharks falling out of bed and Joe Thornton winning the Slimer Award for most ghost-like performance by an NHL player when his team needs him most. Ouch.
Oh, yeah. Him and Marlowe have vanished. Win 7, lose 7. Where did they all go? I guess it would be, you know, tough to prove it, and ultimately that's how the NHL ruled on it. But Wish, I wanted there to be a suspension for the Grabowski bite so bad for one reason.
Which is?
I want to see Brendan Shanahan do a bite video. As a video, clearly. Come on, tell me that wouldn't be the height of comedy. Having Brendan Shanahan do one of his, you know, serious monotone suspension videos about the bite. As the video clearly shows, what the video doesn't show is Max Pacioretty slathering barbecue sauce on his arm before the game. Nonetheless, that is the no means should Mikhail Grabowski bite said lathered up barbecue sauced arm.
This is a clear violation of NHL rule number 47, biting. It states, no player should bite another player.
I don't blame Grabowski for what he did, do you?
If you're Mikhail Grabowski does not have a history of biting.
You just got punched in the face and some guy grabs you around the face with his arm in your mouth. I'm biting.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing. I'm biting.
All, but you're also an old school guy. You liked when they used to bite and pull each other's hair back in the 70s, too.
Oh, we were watching tons of old videos last night here at the house with Tyler and Ellen, and you wouldn't believe, like, it just gets to the point where you say, okay, make it stop. We get the point. There has never been any respect in this game. Because, you know, the drum I've always been banging, this idea that, oh, there's no respect in the game. You're the old-timers. Oh, there's no respect in the game anymore. There never has been. Just go watch old video and then talk to me about respect in the game. I love it when old-timers get on their high horse. Ah, half the league belonged in jail in the 70s, crying out loud. Half the NHL, just stick them in jail. Call
and,
the cops.
Those were just the owners.
It's, you know,
Craig G. Pennington writes in.
We were laughing about that last night. Think about this, folks. If you haven't heard this one before, it's totally true. The NHL is the only sport in North America of the big sports in NA. It's the only sport where the owners go to jail more than the players. It is 100% true, and it continues to this day.
Don't you think that, going back to the Sharks for a second, like, isn't this the epitome of the San Jose Sharks? Like,
totally.
They come out of the gate, they're challenging the Blackhawks for most consecutive games without a loss from the start of the season, then they lose seven in a row!
Yeah.
I mean, that is the Sharks. Bottle
dude,
this.
They're dudes.
Sell it.
Dude.
It's just.
Dude, God. They're dudes. Right? Remember we talked about this when they're on their run. Is this legit or is it fool's gold? And you're like, nope, this isn't legit. I'm not buying it. And I was like, oh, no, I'm warming up, man. I think I'm going to be taking a step onto the bus here. I said, you said, Jeff, don't do it. This is the same San Jose Sharks.
They don't fall in love.
They're a great bunch of dudes. They are. They're awesome guys. Who doesn't want to see Joe Thornton do well? Unless you have like a petty gripe, hello, Boston, with Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
But I would love Joe Thornton to be successful. I'd love Joe Thornton to be nastier. But he's just not that guy. He's nice guy Joe. He's dude.
See, that's exactly why Jeremy Roenick called Patrick Marleau gutless and then backtracked and then said, well, Patrick Marleau did this thing this one time, but I'm not going to tell you about it. Craig G. Pennington writes in, you missed Pekka Rinne posting two consecutive shutouts for the Predators last week against Phoenix and San Jose. Yes. Dave Lozo, our good friend, has Pekka Rinne on top of the Hart Trophy standings. What say you?
I was thinking about this the other day. Which goaltender is most important to his team? I thought about this when Mika Kiprusoff went down. Boy, Calgary's in a world of I don't know what they're net mining right now. Which goalie you think is most important? Is it Craig Anderson? I got it down to three. Craig Anderson, Pekka Rinne, and Kari Lehtinen. And I can't choose which one. I can't decide which one is most important to their team, but I've got it down to three.
Pekka Rinne.
Those are the three that I've seen this. You think Pekka Rinne?
Yeah, I do. Because I don't think there's a. Yeah. You said Craig Anderson, right?
Yes, Craig Anderson.
I think there are two other options if Craig Anderson doesn't work out. If Pekka Rinne doesn't work out, they're effed.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, I mean, Richard Bachman's not lighting it up. He's not going to step in and be Kari Lehtinen. You may make the case for Kari Lehtinen being, you know, being the fuel for that team. Mm-hmm. Without Kari Lehtinen, I don't like the Dallas Stars' hopes of doing anything at all.
Nah.
But you're right about Craig Anderson. And
they also have Jack Campbell in the wings too, though, don't they?
They do. They do.
They got some irons in the fire, as it says. They say
Tyler Bescrayani is in that pipeline as well from our own Sound Attack netminder. You know, the one thing out of those three as well, it will pain Canadian hockey fans to hear this. What do they all have in common? Not Canadian. Where have the goalies gone? In Canada is the hue and cry around here. Hey, you know what? I wanted to bring this up on the podcast before we punt here. We have in our hands right now, Greg Wyshynski, we have the anti-Brett Hall happening. We have the anti-Brett Hall scenario happening. Sean Day, who we talked about, I think, on the podcast a few weeks ago, plays CompuWare, just turned 15 years old, has applied for exceptional status into the OHL. So that process now goes through Hockey Canada wings, and they're going to be the ones that decide whether he's age appropriate or sort of mature enough to play in the OHL as an underager. But here's a kid whose parents are from Burlington, and I think mom's from Burlington and dad's from Toronto. Burlington, Ontario, by the way. Moved to Belgium, had the kid, then moved to Singapore. So the kid's only held Canadian citizenship. Dad's works in the plastics industry, head office in Michigan. So moved the family from Singapore to Michigan. He's lived there his entire life. He hasn't lived in a single day in Canada, but he's going to play for Team Canada International because he holds Canadian citizenship. He's the anti-Brett Hall. He's lived his whole life in the USA, going to play for Canada. What do you think?
Stephen V. King writes in, Jake Allen, Canadian goalie, grumble, grumble.
Save of the year? Was that save of the year?
Oh, what, on Burroughs?
Yeah. The paddle?
When he
spun around.
The paddle save was fantastic. The one last night was really good too, but Burroughs needed to elevate the puck. No. But the one with the paddle was amazing.
Paddle was that's like don't.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right on the goaltending front. I wanted to bring this up actually because I know that this could get your nipples hard.
Who?
Joe Saracino of USA Today has written a rather lengthy profile of Connor McDavid. So Connor McDavid gets major love in USA Today. And the reason I bring it up is because the headline of this story, Jeff Merrick, Connor McDavid.
I just dropped out there for a second. What did you say?
The headline of the story about Connor McDavid.
Oh, it's Connor
Joe Saracino.
Okay.
Yeah. Joe Saracino of USA Today Sports wrote a story about Connor McDavid, a lengthy feature story on McDavid. The headline on this story, sir, Connor McDavid, the LeBron James of hockey.
Oh, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He is awesome. He honestly, if you get a chance to watch the Erie Otters, they're not playing, with all due respect to the players, they're not playing him on, you know, with elite players. Maybe like JP Lombardo and I think Connor Brown's on that line too. So it's not as if he's playing with superstars. But if you get a chance to watch the Erie Otters, go out of your way to watch to go see an Otters game to see Connor McDavid. Or if he represents Team Canada at some tournament, you know, Hlinka, U18s, whatever. Go out of your way to watch this kid. He's remarkable.
But here's the part that kind of got me, besides the comparison to LeBron James. I always dislike when does a player in another sport, when's the last time you heard, oh, he's the Sidney Crosby of baseball? It's so pejorative towards hockey.
The Wayne Gretzky of basketball?
Never hear that shit.
No, never.
Never, not once.
Never. Nope. We heard Michael Jordan of hockey with the Cavaliers in the old Tampa.
Yeah, and every black player that comes up, oh, he's the Tiger Woods of hockey. Of course.
Yeah. Oh, geez, yeah.
Seth Jones is the Tiger Woods of hockey.
He's the Eminem of... Yeah.
Here's the line that got me. Okay, it's talking about McDavid. And Slick skills include what scouts call good old-fashioned hockey sense, or when Wayne Gretzky said the game would slow down for him so he can anticipate and see a couple steps ahead, says the teen phenom. It comes naturally to some people. Ready? And, of course, there are the inevitable comparisons. In this instance, the kid met El Cid. He reminds me of me, the Pittsburgh Penguin, Sidney Crosby tells USA Today Sports. Listen, all due respect to Connor McDavid and any young player that comes through this league, and all due respect to people who don't think that it's an age-appropriate nickname for Sidney Crosby. Sid the Kid is the nickname from now until Sidney Crosby is pushing up daisies in the ground. It's his nickname. You never grow out of it. Billy the Kid was always the kid. Sid the Kid is always the kid. He's never going to be El Cid. It's not going to happen. Don't make El Cid happen. He's the kid.
You know what, though? That is a good point. Who wrote that piece?
Joe Saraceno from USA
It's a great
Today.
Point, because the one thing that I was told before I went, the first time I saw Connor McDavid was last year, an agent friend of mine took me, said, get in the car, meet me at the Hershey Center. We're going to go is for the OHL Cup, which is minor midget tournament. So like York Simcoe Express, Beltire, like all these teams, Toronto Marlies, Marlboros, that's what Connor McDavid seems like. I'm going to show you the future of hockey. You got to see this Connor McDavid kid play. And he did not disappoint. You could tell like he already had a pro polish at the age of 14. And I remember talking to another scout there, and he said, watch, he's got what we call in the industry the 2-second advantage. And so what's that? He goes, he sees plays 2 seconds before they happen. And there's only one other player in the history of the game that's had that, and that's Wayne Gretzky. He said, there are two players, Wayne Gretzky and Connor McDavid, have the 2-second advantage. And you honestly wish it's freaky. You can see him read plays 2 seconds before they happen. That's why you look at great players, the puck just seems to follow them. That's what he has. At 15 years old, the puck just follows him because he sees things 2 seconds before they happen. It's freaky. It's a freaky skill that he has. It's one of those you just can't teach it. You can only that's it. That's just part of your hockey DNA. Normally, those illusions like that, I sort of shrug off as just those tired cliches. But with Connor McDavid, dude, it's legit. You got to see this guy. You got to see this guy.
I hear he's the LeBron James of hockey. Two more quickies as we leave you. And again, thanks for hanging in while we were both out for a week.
Yeah.
I was actually in rehab.
I wouldn't have been able
to
do
No, it's not true at all. I was in St. Lucia. It was beautiful.
You're rehabbing. So you're a Wagoneer now? That's it? No more suds?
Well, yeah, because, you know, really where you want to go to rehab is a place where I know the only brand of beer there by heart. I can tell you how it tastes. Mark Sack writes in, this is a very good point. QOD, you missed a freaking asteroid that damaged the KHL arena. Actually, sir, we missed a meteor. Asteroids do not fall to Earth. Meteors do. Today's fun science fact. And this is from...
You know what I thought of? You know what I thought of
yes.
when that meteor hit the Earth?
Mm-hmm.
Maple Leafs are now going to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
We've seen a meteor hit the Earth. Now I can say the Leafs will win the Stanley Cup this year.
And finally, this is from The Runs, which is the Twitter handle, shit while I twit. What do you even say? QOD, you missed my ballet recital. You promised. We're sorry. We'll make it up to you. We'll go to a parent-teacher conference.
Bad dad.
And then finally, this is from R. Jones. Corey Crawford, Devin Dubnyk, James Reimer, Ben Scrivens for the younger Canadian goalies.
Yeah. That's not Jonathan Quick. That's not Jonathan Quick, Pekka
Corey Schneider.
Corey Schneider. Yeah. That's... No. No, that's different. Hey, here's a conversation I had the other day, and I don't know what the answer is. And there ultimately isn't an answer until all the careers are settled. But first star of the week is John Tavares, who may be the quietest superstar in existence right now.
I dream.
When their careers are done, Wish, who do you think is going to be the better player overall? John Tavares or Eric Staal? Oof. I think Tavares.
Yeah,
I love Eric Staal. I think John Tavares. There's no answer. It's just interesting things to think about when you're driving.
Now, how would you measure that, though?
Oh,
one has a cup already.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, real quick, because I know we have to go, and maybe this is a discussion for another time, but real quick, Bruce Dabrigan wrote a story today about advanced stats and why they're not more readily used on Hockey Night in Canada or Sportsnet, whatever. Here's the thing about advanced stats. It's a niche. I mean, I think things like zone starts, for example, could translate to a general audience. I don't think Corsi can. I don't think Fenwick can.
Right.
But I think that there are some advanced stats that should be seeping into the public the general conversation about hockey that aren't there. But let's not pretend that, like, Joe Sixpack or Jacques Sixpack sitting at home wants to hear about Corsi on Hockey Night in Canada. But I do think he wants to hear about zone starts, just for example.
I agree. And I think I've mentioned this in the podcast before. You know what I think the great unkept stat is? Empty net goals. I honestly think that empty net goals is an indication of excellence at the National Hockey League level. Not the fact that you put the puck in an empty net, but the fact that you're in an opportunity to do so, which means you're protecting a lead at generally one goal. It's under a minute left to play, and the coach says, I want this guy on the ice.
Yep.
You know, Brett Hull used to always brag, oh, I never scored any empty net goals. Yeah, you know why he never scored any empty net goals, Brett? Because there's no way that you're going on the ice with a minute left, and we got to protect a one-puck lead. I think empty net goals is the great unkept stat. And it's one that I look at and I say, you know what? Empty net goals tells me a lot about a player because it tells me what his coach thinks of him. I think
it's
empty
also
net goals
really
is
impressive.
A big stat.
It's also really impressive when you can be on the ice in a 6-on-4 situation and manage to cherry pick like Ovechkin used to. That's talent right there.
Hey man, what's this back check to the hash marks? I back check to the blue line. That's where I back check. Back check to the hash marks. What?
Ovi, what are you doing out there?
Coach said to hang by red line.
He did not say hang by red line.
Oh, red line by net. Oh.
Goal line.
That's
red
line.
Sorry.
Oh, goal line.
I mistake red line for goal line. It's party for now.
I know forecheck, I know paycheck. What is this back check?
I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet, back on the desk today, 11 o'clock for Hockey Central tonight. With a voice.
And,
with a voice again.
Oh, with a voice, no less.
Yeah.
And there you go. Thanks to our new friend, Darcy Kemper, for coming on the show. He was great.
He was great. Yeah. Love
him. We wish him nothing but success. Because we need friends in the industry.
We do, especially us. I mean, we're not well thought of in the industry, Wish. I hate to break it to you. Only rookies, is that our new policy now?
Only rookies.
Wow.
Only rookies. One more little goalie note. Evidently, the Anaheim Ducks are starting their second best goaltender tonight, Jonas Hiller.
Jonas Hiller. That is a... It's weird, eh, with Victor Fast.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a great problem to have, but it kind of feels like Andre Makarov all over again, the 30-year-old rookie.
Yeah.
Great story, great goaltender. We've all seen him a ton if you watch the World Championships. I never thought he'd be this good, though. I thought, Anaheim needed someone, I guess. I thought he's just going to be Band-Aid goaltender. Dude's awesome.
Victor Fast.
He's a horrible name to pronounce. I know.
We would have been skewered by the Ducks fans if we didn't at least mention arguably the biggest sensation that happened in hockey since we left was Victor Fast. There you go. Second star of the week behind your boy Tavares. So anyways, we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
More exciting hockey talk here on the Merrick Bruce Wyshynski podcast, everybody.
Stay tuned.
Bing bong.
Bye.